This is episode 46 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
I'm not Thomas. I'm Judas. Doubting is easy, because doubting costs you nothing. But Judas, he was surrounded by people going on and on about how special Jesus was. But he betrayed him anyway, because he was sure. He believed in something, and he acted on it.
And he killed himself.
Sweetie?
Judas collected his 30 pieces of silver and hung himself.
You all right?
If he was so sure, why'd he kill himself?
Well, Michael, I was not aware of that part of the story. I have no idea why he killed himself. Did he leave a note?
From Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk about Certified. Suddenly I'm hidden, it's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone, and your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. Blake loves to dance with me during the opening when we listen to this song, and I'm usually grooving and moving, but I just finished the episode. I had to watch it late, mom probs, hashtag, and I'm not in the mood to dance.
I don't blame you. Well, tell me who you are.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I never, ever want to take Epicac. That looks like...
You never have had to?
No, never once, never will.
So you weren't one of those kids that eats random things? Because my brother was. My brother was one of those kids.
You got to save it. You got to save it for
how you
relate.
Was that my story?
That's how you relate to the story.
Okay, that's a much lighter story than how I actually relate to this story.
I know. I figured that you would... As soon as I saw that, I said, this is Mary's story all the way.
Yes, it is.
All the way.
So... You gonna find some Max Richter music for my little How I Relate to This Episode?
Oh, crap. I don't have any.
Blake, fail. Epic fail.
Oh,
do you just want me to
no.
go for it?
Yeah, so, just go for it.
Okay. And if you find it, you can just add it.
Yes.
So, okay. My upbeat story that relates to today's episode is that when my brother was little... He did all these things that you weren't supposed to do and that parents like warn you about, like, please don't play with your stuffed animal near a dog because it'll eat its face off. And that happened. Please don't try to catch a squirrel because it will bite you. He caught a squirrel with his bare hands and it bit him. He doesn't have rabies. And the other thing that he did was we were playing like hide and go seek outside and he ate the wild mushrooms growing at the base of our like moldy tree. Like, just, and he doesn't even like mushrooms. Like, what kid even likes mushrooms to begin with? Nonetheless, mushrooms just grow. It's not like it was near our garden or anything. He just ate them. So he had to have Epicac. And this was right at the cusp of the time where, like, our brother-sister rivalry really began. Like, we really started to get on each other's nerves. And I'm never going to forget the scene of he and my mom sitting at the end of the hallway with a big bucket. Because as soon as it happened, you know, I came in and I was like, yo, he just ate those mushrooms. My mom called poison control and poison control was like, do you have Epicac? And she's like, oddly enough, I do. So they were like, okay, chug, chug. And, yeah, that was one memory that I can't get out of my head was watching him and my mom with this bucket. Yeah, Epicac, no joke.
Do you think she really took Epicac for like the show?
No.
Well, she looked like she was really honking.
I mean, people have fake vomited in television shows and movies for ages. Yeah, she totally did a great job.
I don't know. That didn't look fake to me. She looked like
they
she
probably
was
had
really...
a little like bag stuck next to her face.
No, it looked like it was coming out of her
mouth. She did not take Epicac for this show.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, fine. That is your way that you related to this story. Lori took Epicac when she needed to puke up all of the pills.
Yeah.
And your brother took Epicac when he ate random mushrooms.
Oh, my gosh. Crazy town. Oh, all right. Man. So let's talk about this episode, all right, man.
Well, what do you got for your Damon rating?
My Damon rating is totally a 5.
Okay.
I mean, what else would you guys be expecting? But this episode was amazing. It amazing in such a challenging way. I really have not loved a sad show like this ever. So beautiful, beautiful 5 down. How about you?
Mm-hmm. I'm going 5 big ones too, baby. I effing loved this episode. And again, because it felt like a complete story. And it was building on the story that's already been put forth so far.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a complete story for Lori, and it wraps her character up, and it gives her a very good, I would actually say exceptional departure, in quotations as I'm saying it. It gives her an exceptional send-off for her character, in mm-hmm. my opinion. We can debate whether or not she actually, spoiler alert, whether or not she did commit suicide or not. Well, we can debate that.
What?
Oh, we're definitely going to need to debate that then.
Okay.
Okay. So we can debate that. But regardless, it is still very big. 5 Damons for me. And the fact that we're getting 5 Damons for me. Now, this is 2 episodes out of the past 3.
I knew
3.
You were going to give a 5.
Oh, let's. All right. Calm down. All right. Well, on Facebook, Rebecca Flood said, "Goodbye, Lori. Still am in disbelief. How are there only 2 episodes to go?
Truly.
What am I going to do with my life in 2 weeks?
You're going to watch Outlander watched it yet.
And listen to us on OutlanderCast. OutlanderCast@gmail.com. Sorry. Shameless plug.
Why are you telling them our email address?
I meant to say OutlanderCast@...
.com.
OutlanderCast.com.
Anyway, move on, amateur.
Rookie mistake. You know what that is?
Yeah, I know what that is. No.
That's what that is.
I was going to do the boom, boom, boom.
Whatever. She says 4.4 Damons. I personally don't think there has ever been an episode under 4 Damons.
Yes.
They are all somewhere between 4 and 5.
Kaylee Marchi says, "I give this episode 5 Damons. The writers really blended 3 different stories into 1 episode beautifully. Lori in the past, Lori alongside Nora, and Lori alongside Kevin. Lori really came into her own, which made it that much harder to watch her decision at the end. She has been through so much and has such a natural way of helping others and being selfless. So to see that paralleled with something that many people call as a selfish act was very interesting. Also love to see the characters of Nora and Lori act together. They had great chemistry. Same with watching Lori say hi to Pop, aka Kevin Sr. Sometimes you forget how much history these characters have with one another."
And Jordan Zikavus, who is joining us live on Facebook.
Yay, Jordan!
Even though he is a very faithful listener, this one is for you, Jordan.
Beautiful.
Because you're joining us for the first time on live Facebook. Thank you. He says, 5 out of 5 Damons, my favorite episode of the season. Lori has always been my favorite character, and it was beautiful and incredibly heartbreaking to see her come full circle in this episode. Exquisite acting, all the flippin' feels. All of them, Mary. All of them.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, Mavin, what do you got there, kiddo? This one's a good one.
Certified,
I like this one.
Certified, because, I don't know, there's so many different levels of certified. You're certified cray. You're certified all these different psychological terms. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I also thought that, technically, Lori is certified to be a psychiatrist.
Yes, look at you.
And she was a psychiatrist to so many people. In this episode and throughout these seasons,
mm-hmm.
but she's certifiably gone, in my opinion. So that's
very good.
What I'm giving it.
So certified scuba instructor, as she had mentioned.
A certified, in scuba. I didn't think she was a scuba instructor.
I thought it was a certified scuba instructor.
No, you have to have a scuba certification to actually scuba.
Okay, yeah, okay. All right, so
it's not like snorkeling.
All right, either way.
You've never scuba'd, right?
I've never scuba'd. I've snorkeled.
God, you would bug out.
I totally. You know, I've snorkeled, and you know, for those of you who have snorkeled,
my hair elastic. I found one.
There you go. It sucks. Snorkeling sucks because when you go through the water, like the water gets in the little pipe, and you breathe that in. It's all salty and gross. Oh God,
that one broke too. Damn hair.
So
elastic.
Yeah. So she is certified either crazy, certified as a
suicidal. Yeah, now and mentally ill.
A certified
and...
therapist. And certified
yes.
scuba person.
Yes.
So I think you did a good job with that one.
Good. Thank you.
It's time to reheat the leftovers. All right. So let's get the details on this one, as we always do every single episode. This episode was written by Patrick Somerville.
Hello,
and
Patrick.
Carly Ray. Now, Patrick Somerville.
Jepsen? Carly Ray Jepsen?
No.
Call me maybe.
I was just going to say, you know what? Just do it. Just go ahead and do it.
I'm trying to lighten my mood, guys, because I'm really sad. I just finished the episode, so I'm
so Patrick
trying.
Somerville is a returning writer for The Leftovers. And as we said last year, he wrote on 24 Live Another Day, the revival episode of 24, the season, rather. He also wrote on The Bridge. And the episodes that he has written for The Leftovers are The Book of Kevin, this year's premiere, A Most Powerful Adversary, the one where Kevin and Patty in season two go at each other, and also Off Ramp. So he has written quite quite the wide array of episodes for The Leftovers, and they're all quite good. Carly Rae, on the other hand, has written for Mad Men and The Bastard Executioner, which is Kurt Sutter's return to television after Sons of Anarchy, and it was a really bad show. And she's also written on Constantine. And she has not written an episode of The Leftovers yet. This is her first episode. It was directed by Carl Franklin, who directed lots of great television, including Rome, one of our favorites, The Pacific, The Newsroom, House of Cards, Homeland, The Affair, and one for my heart, Bloodline, which is returning on May 26th. I cannot wait. Mm. He also directed Vinyl.
Another depressing show.
And it is also kind of apropos that he directed this episode. You want to know why?
Tell me.
Because he directed two episodes of 13 Reasons Why on Netflix.
Oh, another uplifting.
That was one of Mary's guilty pleasures.
Which episodes?
Tape 5, side A and B.
Okay.
And as I've told you many times, my guilty pleasure right now is the television show Billions on Showtime. Mary's guilty pleasure right now, well, was her guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Was 13 Reasons Why.
Right now it's The Office because I'm so depressed.
I thought it was 13 Reasons Why that show sucks, but that's just me. And he's also directed 4 episodes of The Leftovers, including Off Ramp, BJ and the AC, and Guest. We all remember that fantastic episode
Truly.
Of The Leftovers. The DP was John Grillo, as always, and the song, the main theme song for this week's episode was 1-800-SUICIDE by the Grave Diggers, which is also has a connection to the Wu-Tang Clan. Mm-hmm. So it's great that they brought this back, and they brought the Wu-Tang Clan back into the story. So, my darling, speaking of Wu-Tang Clan...
Yes.
Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Yes.
How are we going to attack this episode today?
We need to mourn Lori.
Yes.
I'm like really not okay right now.
So do you think that she committed suicide?
Yes.
Okay. Because before you didn't sound like you were too convinced that she did.
When did I not sound like I was convinced?
When I said it's a debate on whether or not Lori convinced.
Committed suicide. I took the stance of, are you kidding? Like, of course.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you meant like, what do you mean? I didn't think that happened at all.
No, I thought you meant like, I don't know who doesn't think she committed suicide.
Well, I mean, I think it's left up for interpretation, which was the beauty of that shot.
Yes. Maybe like next episode, she just pops up like a little seal. Kidding!
Like that, what? Like the sea lion that came up and snatched the girl?
Oh my God, stop. Another sad video. The girl is safe. The girl is safe.
In Canada.
This was all about Lori, and we got to...
Well, I wouldn't say it was all about Lori. I would say it was Lori in conjunction with everybody else.
Yeah, but Lori was the theme of this episode.
She was the anchor of the episode.
Yeah, and you got to see season 1 and 2 and how even with characters that we really didn't get to see her interact with too much, like Nora, we've mm-hmm. never seen that. And then even a little bit more with John. You know, I don't know about you, but I've always been kind of like, what? Lori and John? And you got to really have like a nice another moment between them
yeah.
without it being a lion orgy around him. gosh.
One of the things I've always felt like it was a little crammed in for this season of The Leftovers is their relationship, Lori and John. Do I believe that it could happen? Yeah, definitely. I really do. But it just felt like it was thrown at us, and then it was thrown at us because they needed those characters to be in the story, and they needed them to be, they needed them to have an organic reason to be together, mm-hmm. other than just the fact that they're connected by Kevin. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And do you agree that it was kind of mishmashed together to make it work?
It felt that way until today.
Okay.
It felt that way until today because, I don't know, you know, they said it maybe in the last episode that he wasn't angry and mean anymore once he got with Lori, and then talking about that first date with the coffee and how he felt like he could say anything to her. Mm-hmm. He became this soft person who also allowed her to be strong, and obviously Kevin and she weren't getting back together. So I don't know, like this episode made me be like, oh man, I'm glad Nora's out of the picture. Like maybe Lori and Kevin can get back. Oh, Lori's still married and they're both going to die. So that probably won't work.
No.
Are you having a tough time? Because I'm having a tough time with this episode.
No, I'm not having a tough time.
Oh, okay.
I what I loved about this episode is the fact that we got Lori's story. We got we got Matt's story. We got Kevin Sr.'s story already. And those episodes already played out as what I remember I said. There were two concertos. They were like separate vignettes
yes.
that were great unto themselves. But they didn't necessarily forward the plot the way that the other episodes have. This episode, in my opinion, and why I give it a 5, is because not only did we get Lori's episode, but that story was organically intertwined with everybody else. It wasn't just focused on one particular person. It wasn't, and it took everybody's story and moved it forward. We got to know what happened with Nora, where she was, why she was, and when she was. We got to know what happened with Matt, and then also on the other hand, we got to find out what happened with John and Michael. And because of that, we got to see their relationship with Kevin and how that ended up. And we also found out that we are a day before the anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Like, here we go. Hold on to your butts.
Right. And not only
Jurassic
that.
Park.
Oh, sorry. I got it right here.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Hold on to your butts.
Not only that, we got a phone call in from Jill and Tommy.
Oh, gosh.
So even though they weren't there, and am I going to say that it was, you know, is that a little convenient that they just happened to call at this very specific moment in time before she, you know, goes down and commits scuba-cide? Then, yeah, it might be a little convenient, but...
Why did you just make that a word?
I can't take credit for it. I can't take credit for it. I read it online.
I don't like it.
You don't like scuba-side?
No, I feel like we need to have, I'm being straight. I feel like we need to have a moment of realistic, hardcore, hey, if you're in not a great place right now, this is not an episode to watch or talk about, period. Because it's like, okay, it wasn't like 13 Reasons Why suicide. And
no,
as
and
you said,
and
still
that's
up for
why
debate, but... If some people think that she didn't commit suicide at the end. But I just need to, like, say this. I just need... It's in my heart that, like, we need to have it said that, like, if you're listening and if this affected you and if you've been dealing with sadness, please reach out for help. So I'm just putting that in there because scuba-side, like, yes, it's a smart little word, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because I just watched the episode. I'm, like, very touchy about... this.
I understand. And that is why I think this episode succeeds so well also, because it does tackle, we have talked about throughout this season, the difference between religion and logic and madness, and what is the point? What is the purpose of what we're trying to do here? And Lori confronts this purpose. She confronts, what is she here for? Mm-hmm. What is she doing? You know, I think she went to Australia with the intent of proving everybody wrong, telling everybody that they were nuts. And at the end, when she hears Kevin and she's speaking with him, and he's saying, I'm not nervous. I'm totally fine. Mm-hmm. And she sees Nora and she's talking to her, and she's talking to her about the beach ball and how that really had an effect on Nora and Nat's relationship, and what she was trying to accomplish by going to the microwave people. And then she speaks to John, who is totally comfortable with the fact that she didn't tell him about Evie, and not that he is all upset. He just wanted to tell her that she's loved. When she realizes, I can't help anybody here. Not everything I do is going to fix everything. Remember when she said in episode 4, if someone's in the middle of a psychotic break, you just kind of have to let them be in the psychotic break.
That's what tonight was, or last night was.
But I think she like Matt recognized in episode 5 when he recognized the faith is kind of absurd. I think she has spent her life trying to fix things and trying to take control and trying to change things. And suddenly, everybody is in a place where they don't need her to fix them. They don't need her to be the therapist. And you start putting all the things together, and she just doesn't see the purpose anymore. She doesn't see it. And it succeeds because they don't show it. They don't show her committing suicide. They don't show her, you know, struggling. It's an acceptance. It's like, and like that final shot of her going into the water. And they don't highlight the fact that she's consciously making a choice. She does it, and then they show the water scene and the mm-hmm. sound of the water lapping up against the boat.
And that's all you hear through the credits.
That's it.
The water.
That's it. And I cannot stress how well they tackled this subject. Like, I cannot stress that enough. Mm-hmm. Do you agree in your opinion?
I mean, I don't, it's such, I don't want to use the word well. You know, it's so funny how when we, the adjective that you use to describe portraying suicide on television, I'm not saying that I disagree with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words, guys. I'm emotional. I just did it, but I wouldn't use the word well, but I understand where the well is coming from, and so I'm nodding to it. Like, mm-hmm. yes, they did do that well. They did. It was haunting and beautiful and sad, and yet not in your face or grotesque. And
it leaves it to your interpretation.
Yes,
which is what The Leftovers does.
Whereas
so amazingly,
13 Reasons Why shows in grave detail, like, terrible suicide.
All right, so we have one end of the spectrum in 13 Reasons Why.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't watched it.
It's, yeah.
And then we have the other spectrum of what The Leftovers did.
Yes.
What did you find for the character? And it's hard to say what did you find most satisfying? Because it's not satisfying, but just in terms of the character itself.
No, this was beautiful, and I love that she... I'm, like, gonna cry. I love that it happened in the water, because... So, as a mother, I love that in the beginning of the episode, they started off reminding us of the fact that Lori lost the baby, like, while the baby was in her, while she was looking at the baby in her womb. And when babies are in wombs, they're floating, they're swimming, they're in amniotic fluid. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, like, Lori's going to disappear floating just like her baby did.
Yep.
And I thought it was a really, I mean, granted, that wasn't the way they like started, or that was the way they started the episode, actually, wasn't it? No, she was talking to the other woman, right?
Right. Oh, the other woman, by the way,
First episode woman.
Yeah, the first person we ever meet on The Leftovers is this lady who went out to her car and her baby disappeared. And she again shows up later on that episode when, remember when Kevin says, we're still here? And she says, yep, we sure are. And now she has reappeared again, which is really cool.
Yeah. So, yes.
And to know that this woman went to Lori for help, and when she did go to Lori for help, and the GR was watching, two of them were watching outside, and she's describing everything that's happening with her baby. She's like saying, obviously going to return, and they're going to return in the same exact spot. My baby can't even crawl. Will my baby even know me? What if I'm not there? And she's asking Lori, what should I do? And Lori has no words.
I loved how they added in everything about how they were, how that woman was having fertility struggles.
Oh my God.
Because you know, when we were having that first episode and she was like, oh my God, my baby's crying, blah, 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 blah. And then she turns around, it's gone. Like, that was sad. But now to know this whole backstory of how they tried and tried and tried and tried and tried and gave up and were ready to adopt. And then they got their baby. And now it's like, maybe this baby's with all the other babies. Mm-hmm. What?
Oh my God. Goodness.
What?
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Like, I just, this was a mother episode, and it was such, I guess maybe that's how I saw this episode, was Lori being a mother to so many people and holding their hand and knowing that you can't change people's minds. You know, when people, when your adult kids have their minds made up, they make their own lives and they make their own mistakes. And I'm at an age where a lot of my peers have made some very poor mistakes, and I've seen how their parents have just had to say, I've tried, and they just have to live their own lives. And I feel like that's what Lori has done with Nora, with John, with Kevin. Like, I love them, but I can't change their mind. Mm-hmm. I just can't. And they have to live their lives, and it pains me. It pains me for them, but I still love them, and I need to live my life or not live her life. God, you know what just killed me, though, is that freaking phone call at the end.
I know.
With Jill and Tommy, I thought it's going to be okay. She's going to say, you know what, turn this boat around. And I would have been fine with that being the end of Lori's story. Turn what? This boat around, bring me to the airport.
Oh, and let me see my kids.
Just to know that, like, Lori was going to go home to Jill and Tommy, who I'm really so sad for them, especially Tommy.
Well, I mean, they have kind of dealt with their own issues. I mean, at least the way that the show is portraying it, the show has capped off their story for what we know as of right this very moment. Jill is off in college, and she has gone through what she's gone through. She is clearly made up with her mother, even though in the first episode she said, oh, she's going to keep apologizing to me and everything. But at least this conversation implies that Jill and Lori are capable of having a normal conversation. Mm-hmm. And when you consider how the show started, where it was, they're not speaking, Lori is not speaking to Jill, and Jill is all kinds of messed up, that's a huge arc. And not only that, Tommy has his own life now. He is in the police department at Jarden. He's got his own thing going on. He doesn't seem to be following up on these cults like he was before. He just seems to be living his own life. Mm-hmm. So they can, I think, in terms of the story, move forward without their mother.
I'm just glad this episode didn't air last week on Mother's Day.
Oh, yes.
That would have been... They probably were like, ooh, we don't know when it's going to come out, but wouldn't that be like totally effed up if it comes out on Mother's Day? Because Nora, of course, bites the bullet and wants to go head out with the microwave people to go see her kids or whatever it is.
Yep.
And we get Grace, who opens up about her kids. And now we know why she's looking at all those bags of shoes, creepy Grace. And now we know who were those people building the boat. They weren't her kids. but, you know, it was, we really focused on the mothers. We didn't focus on Kevin or Matt.
No, because we didn't need to.
It was all about the moms. This, man, I feel like they were like hoping that it, maybe it would have ended, been on Mother's Day. Like, this episode's going to be all about the moms.
1 week late. Yeah. Damn. Hey, you know, another thing that I wanted to talk about too is when Lori does decide to take the pills initially, mm-hmm. you know, she does it, and then she has this sudden realization, like...
No, it was not sudden.
No, it was.
I'm going to write a note.
Yeah, no, no. But
and then I'm going to tape the note, and I'm going to lie down with the note.
And by the way, with Wherever I May Roam from Metallica playing, which connects to what they played, Nothing Else Matters, in the season one finale.
Oh, wow.
With the same quartet, the same... I forget the name of the cello quartet who does the music, but it's the same band who does Metallica songs. Really cool, really cool connection. She has this sudden realization when she's laying down on the couch. She's like, okay, I can't do this. And why she doesn't do it, it isn't obviously explained, other than
Apocalyptica.
Thank you, Facebook. Thank you. Oh, Missy Ortiz, thank you so much. They're like Swedish or something, and they just rock out with cellos. Anyway, she has this sudden realization, and what prevents her from doing it is joining the Guilty Remnant. And when you look back at the mom, Sam's mom, like the baby, the one that Lori had in the therapy
session, okay.
The mother was asking Lori, "What should I do? Tell me what to do." And when Lori goes out to the Guilty Remnant, she knows that she doesn't have any answers, but she needs someone to tell her what to do. So she says to the people that are there, tell me what to do. And it was kind of jarring to see Lori in the Guilty Remnant gear again. It was sad. It reminded you of where she had come from in terms of the story, but also as a character, and how far she had come and how hurt she was. And we also learned that the baby that she had in her belly did in fact depart. Mm-hmm. She saw it leave from the sonogram or whatever it's called. It was gone. And that was one of those mysteries that I don't think people necessarily needed answered, because I think they could infer it. But it is now confirmed for those of you who weren't entirely sure, the baby did depart that she had. So, and it's not just about the baby either. There's just so much pain there. There's just so much that she is unaware of. Like, not unaware, but she just is at a loss for words.
She's coming to a grip with, I mean, her conversation with Grace.
Yep.
You know, with Grace, we're like, oh, so tell me about Kevin. Was he a good husband? Yeah, he was a great husband. He saved my life. Oh, well, why did you divorce him? Well, I joined a cult, and that's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. Like, Lori's gone through so much in these past 7 years, as have all of these characters. And I think that it was beautiful that we were able to see things through her. And I'm glad that they kept her in the story, even if it meant she had to marry John.
No, I'm glad they kept her in the story, too, because she, again, did serve, aside from Kevin, a junior, that is, she did serve as this kind of logical person who rooted the show in what is real. Mm-hmm. You know, we can get so lost in things like David Burton and International Assassin and Patty because those things are freaking cool. And that's what makes this show so freaking weird. And things get, like I said this before, things get unbelievably strange on this show. But Lori was the person who, even in the first season, Lori was the person who was a mom, who joined a cult because she had no answers. The second season, she's there and she's trying to tell Kevin that he's a little crazy. Mm-hmm. And even in the third one, even in the third season, she's here trying to tell everybody, listen, I'm here to help people. I just want to do what I want to do.
Except when I drug you. I love how she was just so chill,
mm-hmm,
looking at that carrot soup, being like, I know what I'm going to do.
And I loved seeing the pills there. And like, I didn't put it together. I didn't necessarily think.
Really? You didn't think she was going to touch them?
I didn't think she was going to touch them. I just, for some reason, it just didn't click on me.
Oh, man.
And then in that scene when they're all having dinner together, and I could see Michael kind of like being a little funny.
He was hiccuping.
Yeah. And even John's like acting a little funny. And then all of a sudden, just you know, yep. Kevin Sr.'s face just falls right down into into the plate of food. I was like, what the heck? And then I realized, oh. So that was one of those other things, too. Like, it reminded me of Hannibal Lecter in the movie Hannibal.
Ew, yes.
When he's eating yes. Ray Liotta's brain.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. And he is talking to Ray Liotta like, you know what? It's talking to him like a child. And Lori was speaking to Michael like a child, like, you know, I didn't think about that. And she's like rubbing his back because she knows that he's totally effed up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about that. Did he write a note? And then John has that recognition like, you just drugged us. And he can't help but fall over. And that's the end of it. And then that wry little smile from Amy Brenneman. When she looks at the dog. The dog, by the way.
So many dog barks in the closed captions this week, by the way. Dog barking all over the place.
She looks at the dog and says, I borrowed your pills. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, and that was one of the cool things about this episode. As heavy as it was actually kind of funny.
Yes, they did a great balance. And then they hit you at the end. And you're like, oh. Right. Oh, no more funny.
I mean, talking like things like Officer Koala Fart, you know, like when John and Lori are having this conversation, yeah. You know, in the background, you know, they're talking to this guy, Kevin yep. Sr. and Grace, and all of a sudden, you just see the shovel come up out of nowhere, hit this guy in the head.
Done.
He's like, hey, you guys want to give me a hand? Like,
and then the little hamster, funny, fuzzy.
Oh my God. I mean, it's like dry mm-hmm. and it's so matter of fact. It's just put in there and you don't think you're supposed to laugh, but you can't help but laugh because it's hysterical.
Yeah.
You know
who was not hysterical though?
Who?
Nora.
Nora.
Nora
oh,
was
man.
All shades of crazy. All shades of crazy in this episode.
Yes, she was.
I am surprised Lori stayed in that vehicle with her. Did she?
That's
the van.
Yeah, I mean the way that Nora was speaking, it was almost like she was trying to bait.
Yes,
Lori.
And thank goodness it is Lori. Like they really just used Lori's skill set and her strength so much in this episode. And I love how Matt was just chill because you know, and your siblings with someone who's just. You can handle a lot when you're someone's sibling.
Yep.
But Lori was just taking it and allowing Nora to just go off on the deep end, pushing her. Well, what would you say? What would you say if I paid you money? What would you say if you did the handprint thing? Tell me. Why, you know, like Lori right. just kept her cool.
And even Lori recognized that Nora was not looking for whatever the other people that were asking for her for John's advice regarding the handprint. She knew that Nora was looking for closure in her mm-hmm. own way. And I think she knew, despite what Nora was putting off, that she knew Nora wanted to go mm-hmm. and go to the microwave people and go see your kids. And I think that's why Lori was willing to put up with so much until the lighter part. Because that lighter is a remembrance of Jill, and she held that kept her human, even when she was part of the GR. She even admits, I threw it in the sewer, but mm-hmm. I went back and got it, because that was part of her humanity that Lori was never willing to give up.
Yep.
So what makes me consider she had given up, even though there's an interpretation where you could say, well, she heard from her kids and now she doesn't have – maybe hearing from her kids is what keeps her from committing suicide at the end.
Why didn't she just go to the spa?
Why didn't she just call
– What happens in a $2,000 spa?
Oh, my God.
What do they do to you?
Lots of good facials, I'll tell you that.
What kind of oils? Like gold? Tears from little koala bears they rub you with? Like, what? What happens in a $2,000 spa?
Whoa, time out.
Koala bear tears.
How did you?
A baby koala bear.
Oh my God, I'm sweating. How did you come up with baby koala bear tears?
Because we said Mr. Koala Farts or whatever.
Oh my goodness gracious. Listen, the reason why I consider the fact that she did commit suicide is because she did give up the lighter to Kevin at the end. And she does say to him, goodbye, Kevin. They both acknowledge
the What fact, does the lighter say?
Don't forget me.
Yes. Thank you.
So, that being said...
/ I'll see you tomorrow when you die.
No, I don't think Lori... In fact, if... I'll even go this far. If they do bring back Lori, and if she doesn't commit suicide, and we see her again... I'm going to be a little disappointed. I'm going to be a tad disappointed because I think that this was a very good send-off for her character. I mean, she's gone from being a guilty remnant member. Then she tries to help people by giving fake hugs. And then she tries to help... You know, Matt and John, and she is helping people with the handprints, and she keeps trying to take control of everything. And finally, when she hears Kevin, she has let go of everything, and she has let go of trying to fix everything. That is a complete character arc, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need. There's
I
no
like
need.
That they were like, oh, we're being... Did Kevin ever tell her he was cheating on her?
Yeah, she knew.
Oh, okay. Then never mind.
She knew.
I was going to be like, they'd like lay everything all out except that
You know
thing.
What? We keep referring to the conversation between Kevin and Lori, and I have the sound here, and I just want to play it.
All of it?
Not all of it, just...
Is this the lighter Joe gave you?
I threw it in a sewer grate and then went back for it. Don't tell Gillette.
That's nothing. Killed her hamster.
You what?
Yeah. When you guys went down to that mock UN thing, didn't fucking feed it. I went up there about an hour before he got home and was dead.
Oh.
Took it to the neighbor's trash and threw it in there. Told you guys it ran away. Well, rest in peace, Mr. Fuzzy.
Mr. Funny. Mr. Funny.
He tries Mr. Fucking Funny.
Remember that psychosomatic medical conference thing I went to in Phoenix? I lasted 2 hours, and then I went to a spa that cost $2,000 a night.
I hated our house.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't say anything because it was your money who bought it.
What? You should have said something. It was our house.
You loved it. I wanted you to be happy.
I was pregnant.
What?
I was pregnant. 16 weeks.
I don't... When?
7 years ago tomorrow.
Ugh.
I was lying in the doctor's office, staring at the ultrasound. Looking right at it. And I was gone.
Why didn't you tell me?
I mean... Raised two beautiful kids. Best thing we ever did. The last best thing. Did you want another baby?
No.
Me neither. I didn't tell you because I didn't want to, and then... And then I didn't have to.
This freaking music.
Oh, every time I hear this music now.
People gonna disappear or do really messed up stuff.
Are you scared?
Scared of what?
Scared of them strapping you to a seesaw and holding you under the water until you drown?
The last time it happened, you know, where I went, that was so... It was real. Well, maybe I was dead, but I had never felt so alive. No, I'm not scared.
Then I'm not scared either.
And it could work, so I could come back.
I really hope you do.
Ugh. Because I'm not.
Will you stay?
No, I'm gonna die.
I can't.
Going scuba diving.
Shh.
Wait. Got your lighter.
Oh, you can keep it.
And read what it says.
Thanks. Is Nora gone?
Oh my god.
We're all gone.
Bye, Lori.
Goodbye, Kevin.
Goodbye.
Oh, man.
Yes.
That, in and of itself, both of them, Emmys, all the Emmys, every single Emmy there is.
Preach.
And that's why I can accept the fact that Lori has decided to move on. That she has decided because she has accepted the fact that she has let each character go in her own way. You know, she deals with Nora. She deals with Matt in the previous episode. In this episode, she deals with John and accepting his faith and accepting the fact that he's not necessarily crazy.
I think you're crazy.
And she deals with Grace and that she isn't necessarily crazy either, at least the way that she is portraying
it. I think she's a
liar. You know, and maybe she is a liar, but at least in terms of Lori, she has accepted the fact that she just wants to find out where the kids' shoes are. Like, what's wrong with that? You know?
Yeah.
And then she deals with her ex-husband, and her ex-husband is saying he's not scared. All of these things happen. Mm-hmm. And to have her go from GR member who doesn't talk to go to all of the things that she's gone through and then finally accept people as they are, that she does not have to fix them, is such an amazing character arc.
So I know a couple other moments that killed me and I really might start crying because this episode was so hard for me.
Yes.
When Nora's talking about how she needs the pain medicine because she got her IUD out.
Oh,
and Lori's
yeah.
like, wow, you're trying again. And Nora's like, oh, no, it's fine. But she doesn't say, no, I needed to take it out so I could go with the microwave people. So now Lori's like, wow, Nora and Kevin are trying to have a baby.
Oh, that's another. Oh, yay.
And I lost my baby.
And think about that subcontext when she asks him, did you want to have another baby?
And he says, no.
Which he was right at the time.
Yes. But like. Here she is thinking Nora and Kevin are trying to have a baby. And then when Nora's off to go see her kids with the microwave people, and there's that moment where I was like, is she going to think about going to meet her baby?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I mean, you won't be able to find a 16-week-old baby.
But like, you know what? Now that we've discussed that, let's also talk about Nora here for a moment. Do you think, based on the beach ball story that she told to Lori And Lori had said, listen, if they let the beach ball keep going, there'd be chaos. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me is, you know, a metaphor for what is happening with the DSD. You know, Nora has the opportunity to keep on going with the beach ball, keep doing the thing that takes her attention away from everything else. She like the beach ball are her kids. Like, I want to go see my kids. That's the beach ball. And DSD is the guy who grabs the beach ball and squeezes the air out of it. Are we thinking that Nora, as she's weeping in Lori's arms, has accepted the fact that she can't go with the beach ball, that she can't go see her kids? Or are we thinking...
Wait, I don't understand what you just said. Say that one more time.
When Lori says to Nora, listen, the problem is if...
The ball would create chaos.
The ball creates chaos.
Yes.
Right? The DSD is the person who is...
The ball squisher.
The ball squisher, okay? The DSD has to fix this problem.
Yes.
Because if it is fake, if it's not real, then they're going to take other people, and they're going to...
Yeah.
And it's going to be a problem. Like, they're going to take people's money.
Exactly.
So are we looking at... Like, remember, Lori asks Nora, are you going to... call the DSD.
Yeah.
And tell them that this is happening. We're going to get rid of this now.
Okay.
And Nora doesn't give an answer. She tells the story of the beach ball.
Because she's saying, I'm being asked to be the security man right now.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah. Is she crying because she realizes that the dream of seeing her kids is now gone? Or is she crying because she realizes, I don't care. I just want to see my kids.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
Are you sure?
I think that Nora joined the DSD to find something like the microwave people. Mm-hmm. I don't think she did it because, oh, I'm pissed. I think she's like, if there is something out there, I want to be one of the first people to know it exists.
Yeah. Okay. So do you think she's going to walk down that little ridge with Matt and say, yes. Hey, heat me up?
Yes. Let's reheat the leftovers, man. We're here. We're still here, and so are you.
Put
so let's
me in the
do
microwave
this.
And let's get it done.
And Matt's just gonna say, "I'm just gonna stay here and plug my nose and watch you."
Oh man,
what's gonna happen to Matt?
And the fact that Matt is—he's just so down with it. I mean, he's down with whatever is happening.
Why? That I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, and Matt is along for the ride. I love that he's by his sister's side. They have been in such different aspects on their own journeys. They have both lost their families.
Yep.
And even like newer families, you know, the new kid, Noah and Kevin, they've lost them. They're gone. They still have each other.
Right. Oh, you know, one thing that I really loved, the imagery here, mm-hmm. is they show Matt and Nora overlooking the machine, the microwave here, and they show them overlooking the ridge, mm-hmm. and show them, you know, back to back, and they're out looking, and he has his hand over her shoulder. The same exact freaking imagery when they showed Matt and little Nora together in Two Boats and a Helicopter.
Yes.
When their house was burning down.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in this show is done by accident.
No.
Not a single thing is done by accident.
Oh my goodness. Oh, and another thing we learned too is the French officer, Naked Yoga. Hashtag
Mr. Strongest Toes Ever, man.
Hashtag Naked Yoga picking up binkies with his big toe. He didn't just blow this stuff up for no reason. He actually had a reason, which was he read Revelations and he believed that there was a seven-headed monster.
So once again, I have not read that chapter of the Bible because that freaks me out. I did not know that that was in the Bible. I'm being honest.
Oh,
I went
goodness.
To summer Bible camp, winter Bible camp. I used to go to church 3 times a week. I never read Revelations. Because I was like, I do not need to know. If Jesus comes down and says, Mary, do you want to go? I'm just going to say, yes, please. I just don't know the homework. Do you have any extra credit I can pass in? Because I've been really good, Jesus.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, so straight up, there's something about a seven-headed Godzilla?
You know what?
No, I'm being honest. Is there something about a seven-headed Godzilla?
Yes, there is. And Matt even says it's not meant to be taken literally. And of course, Nora has the retort, oh, so it's only not meant to be taken literally when it's ridiculous? Like, Matt is taking the story of the floods quite literally in Revelations. when it's convenient for him. Although now I feel like he has given up on that particular idea, because he just seems to be so easygoing and he's just like along for the ride, like you said.
Matt's dying.
Matt is dying, and I think he's accepted that, and I think he's okay with it.
Vicky Johnson on Facebook said, it freaks a lot of people out. Bible Camp is not going to cover that one. We did a lot of Psalms.
Man. Oh, my goodness. So, in the end, I think this episode is probably one of the better episodes of The Leftovers. I would probably put it in the top five.
Correct.
And I think it works. I think it matters ultimately because, again, like I said, The Leftovers is trying to explore, at least at season three, and you can make an argument for the other seasons, that it's all about belief and what you want to believe and why you believe it. We've talked about this multiple times, ascribing meaning to whatever you think has meaning. Mm-hmm. You can think, hey, there really is a seven-headed monster in this volcano, and I'm going to blow it up.
Well, Kevin Sr. thinks a flood's coming. Other people think Kevin Jr. has to save the day.
Exactly.
Like, it's not too far-fetched that someone thought a seven-headed monster in the Bible, which is mentioned in the Bible, which is the most popular book ever.
Yep.
You know, I'm surprised more people haven't shot anything to try to get a seven-headed monster in The Leftovers.
True. But that happened. It's there. We saw naked yoga.
Yes. I need like more naked yoga in my life.
We saw a lion sex cult.
Oh my God.
All those things. And they needed
those to like lighten up the fact that this was going to be such a tough episode.
Right. And what happens to Lori and to what she's doing when she recognizes that the things that she has believed in, logic and helping people, and trying to fix people no longer applies. And all of those things have happened to Matt.
So why did she...
And to Nora, and to now John, and to Kevin. Like, all of these things, everyone has ascribed meaning, and that's why this episode is so important.
Why did she leave Jill and Tommy?
Because I think that they're, like I said earlier, their lives, within the context of the story, okay, their lives have now... Their stories have concluded within the story, but outside of the story, they've grown up. They're getting their own lives now. Like,
who are they going to see for therapy? Because they're going to need so much.
all the copays. Oh my goodness!
They're going to need to watch that movie.
What movie?
The little funny movie with the mannequin and the magic hat and rainbows.
You know, I never saw that. Never once saw it.
Me neither.
Didn't see it. So
Kevin's cool with dying.
Yes,
and
Kevin is cool.
He's like down. He came in on his horse, and he's like, I'm rip-roaring to go. Kevin Sr.'s just like in love with Grace. Mm-hmm. Kind of creepy, Kevin Sr. Watch your back when you sleep, please. Grace's dog is still effing creepy as hell. Okay? And just so you know, dogs barking still in the closed captions. Mm-hmm. That dog got all vicious on Lori when she was creeping on those.
The dog bit her.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Another dog.
Canine DNA. You better watch yourself. You're going to be a senator or something.
So let's, for those who are a tad confused, I know it's a little late in the episode to do this, but I'd like to do it anyway. Let's talk about the timeline real quick that this episode goes through. The episode begins 2 years after the departure. Now, we do know that the episode begins, that the first season begins 3 years after departure. So the opening scene for this episode is dated before the first episode of The Leftovers.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Before she joins the GR.
Right.
Yes.
So she joins the GR, and that is a year before the first episode of The Leftovers. And then we see everything that happens. We see Lori go through the departure day, and then we see her apparently commit suicide, well, tried to commit suicide before mm-hmm. the departure day. Mm-hmm. Which makes me wonder, by the way, how long have these suicidal thoughts been a part of
Lori's
psyche? did she ever really get past it? Like, it reminds me of the lady in Off-Ramp, who she tried to help in season two. Like, the lady in Off-Ramp, you know, thought she was okay and she was getting better. And then she realized, I'm not better. And then she turned off and crashed her car with an oncoming traffic and killed her family.
I feel like Lori didn't have too much of it when she was in the GR because she felt like she was doing something. Like she was wearing her pain on her sleeves physically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so... I've talked about before how like if I dealt with this, if this happened to us, I think I would have been one of those people in the GR.
Really?
Haven't I said this on the show or is this just a conversation in my own brain?
No, I think you might have said it, but I don't clearly recall.
I like think I'm emotional enough that I would not be able to handle continuing on.
Right.
And so it's Lori's always kind of been like my little like soul sister in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing her that she was pregnant while of course I've been pregnant during this show and had a baby and being a mother and just so heavy, and I'm so sad to say goodbye to her.
I know.
I'm sorry that I keep changing it. Like, I'm not over it. I believe it. I believe that it happened, and it was so beautifully done on so many different levels of imagery and the silence and just hearing the water lapping. And as I said, the whole like womb imagery. Just I don't even know if they meant to do that, but to me. It just was so much, but you were talking timeline. So
sorry. Yeah. And Annie mentions this on Facebook and she actually corrected me and I apologize. I was kind of ad-libbing. The first suicide attempt was not before the departure. It was after the departure. What I meant to say was the first suicide attempt was before the,
premiere.
Like, it was before she joins the GR. And that takes place 1 year before she joins the GR. That's what I meant to say. I apologize. And the timeline then continues. We see the rest of the show as it is, and then the timeline is split. And this is when Damon Lindelof is at his best when he's doing this nonlinear storytelling. When he's showing one part of the story, and then as that part of the story is going, he's showing the same character interact with other characters prior to what is happening with. Like he's showing what's happening with Nora and Matt as it's going along the same timeline with what's happening with John and Kevin. But everything that happened with Nora and Matt happened prior.
Yeah, it's just that. Mirror.
It's just great stuff. So are you ready to get into the listener feedback?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
This is music. Max Richter.
On Facebook, Fernando Lario says, "It was great. The acting was superb. Sad to let Lori go. What bothers me a little is that I thought these characters had moved on and came to terms with the departure, but after seeing Lori and Nora's characters last night, they are clearly not. Can't wait to see what they have in store for us for the next 2 weeks."
Suzanne Marone Carew said, "This is the time when we need to be more than five Damons. Lori's backstory was a painfully perfect reminder that when something as devastating as a sudden departure occurs, it can truly break you. Even for someone like her who had all of the professional tools and coping mechanisms at her fingertips, once something like that gets in your DNA and breaks your spirit, there is little chance of recovery. Though she tried, and it just fills a void differently for her, I guess," says Suzanne. I'd love to think that she felt she could be more used to Kevin on the other side, and that's why she took her life, but I just don't know. What if Jill's call came 5 minutes later?"
Oh, man, that would have been...
Oh, my God.
Oh.
That would have been too sick.
That would have been
She
tough.
Got to say I love you to her kids.
And that's what matters.
Yes.
Terry Pitnick says, "The Lori-centric episodes always catch me off guard.
Yep.
You kind of forget about her, and then they just nail it. The flashbacks are always perfect of everyone's personal journey. Hers had the most surprising closure." And I agree with you, Terry. You, throughout this season, it's easy to forget about Lori,
mm-hmm.
because she is kind of off in her own deal. Because
she's not crazy. She's not believing in the Book of Kevin. She's not seeing dead people. She is so on solid ground, mm-hmm. so we think, in her own way. Allison Crossblouse gives it 5 daemons. Amazing. The last few minutes gave me goosebumps. The Leftovers makes my brain explode every Sunday night, she writes.
Carrie Dowling says, 5 daemons, spectacular acting by Amy Brenneman.
Yes.
I was with her on Laurie's journey, heart and soul. Mm. And the lighter. Oh. Oh my goodness, the lighter.
I'm gonna melt.
Don't forget me. Fighting with Nora to get it back, to give it to Kevin. Don't forget me. I felt like I was punched in the gut. Oh my God. The subtext there. Oh.
Yes. Honey Badger Nora, she also wrote. Can we please talk about her? Is she off the hook? Yes. Is she off the hook, meaning is she gone? Is she microwaved?
She is off the hook.
Well, for now. I mean, she comes back. And so I think she is going to get zapped a little bit. You don't think they're going to let her into that trailer?
I don't know what she's
going to
do.
Church says, 5 daemons. Didn't think there would be an episode under 5 daemons from here on out. The lighter reminds us of the depth of grief surrounding the sudden departure, a throwback to season 1 for sure. The writers are tying it all together so beautifully. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to seeing what Laurie is doing in the hotel. So a lot of people think Laurie's going to be in the hotel. I don't know if Laurie's going to be in the hotel.
To be honest, I hope not. I really do hope not.
You know, if this is religious-y at all, some aspects of religion believe that if you commit suicide, you don't get to go further on in life or in the afterlife, that you get stuck in.
Right. Right, and
whatever,
that's possible.
I don't really know. We didn't learn that in Bible camp either. Buffington Post.
On Twitter says, 5 daemons, unlike Kevin and Nora, Laurie doesn't need some excuse to kill herself. Also, I've had to add daemons to my phone directory.
Siri doesn't know what daemons means. Mike Cardenas says, for such an emotionally complex show, Laurie's character managed to sum up 3 seasons in 3 words. You ready for it?
Yep.
We're all gone.
Oh.
What a gut punch. 5 daemons. You know, it's so crazy because, of course, our big tagline is, we're still here.
Yep.
But Lori's tagline is, we're all gone.
Oh, man. Angie Graves Lee says, 5 daemons. This episode felt like it belonged in season 1. Hmm. A window that was thrown open to understand the deep pain and grief of one of the characters. Laurie was a helper who realized she could no longer help anyone, including herself.
I feel like the writers, when they were doing this episode, they were like, oh my God, you know what we should totally do? We should bring back the lighter. Yes, the lighter. Oh my God, the lighter. Yes. Like, they probably were just like so excited to pull on different things from season 1. Well, Melissa Ducote says, loved it. Love Laurie's story. Loved the music, especially the 1-800-SUICIDE, which was a song I only know because of the Demon Knight soundtrack, and it always had a hypnotic feel for me. Bonus points for Grave Digga's Wu-Tang. Coming back to the story, I love that today's special was brought up. I also love that we got to see a little nugget of the Nora Matt relationship. We got to see them behaving like siblings, bickering in the car and Matt supporting his sister in the end.
Alex sent an email and he says, Mary and Blake, I keep hearing the question about whether Kevin Jr. experience in International Assassin was real. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that confirmed for us in crazy white fellow thinking when we got to see what Jr. saw on TV in the hotel room actually happened to Senior?
Yeah.
Jr. wouldn't have had any way to know that to create it in his mind, right? Doesn't that confirm for us what he had experienced wasn't just in his mind, but was in fact real?
I've been believing that International Assassin is real. How about you?
I think ultimately, What is most important?
Yeah,
is what Kevin said, and as what we played earlier, International Assassin was real to Kevin.
Yeah,
that's what matters.
Yes,
and whether or not it was real or it's a real thing for everybody else, it was real to Kevin. He experienced it, and he's gonna go back.
Okay,
all right. So let's get to the voicemails. We got them right here.
This is Rafe Collins Jr. Hi, you guys. Got a lot of stuff to get to, so I'll try to get through it as fast as I can. The trip to Australia, I think, crystallized. It was a direct confrontation between believers and non-believers, and the perspective of the show, I think, keeps shifting. Between the side that the show seems to take shifts episode by episode and scene by scene. John has seen Kevin come back from the dead. He has seen it with his own eyes. He is like Thomas, who has actually placed his hand in the wounds in Christ's side. But he cannot explain his belief to anybody else. It's a position a lot of believers are in. They have had an experience that is unique to them. They cannot telepathically convey that experience to skeptics or to non-believers. There is nothing that they can do. I heard somebody say Lori is a terrible therapist. I think she is a terrible therapist. I think she's awful. I wish there was someone from the American Psychological Association that was like a leftovers watcher. Like, there are some ethical issues going on somewhere. I think she's horrific. I think that her education allows her a phony sense of security and allows her to convey a phony sense of security to other people. She's really as confused as everybody else. Matt, it was really interesting to watch him lose his faith and then sort of gain it back and then sort of lose it and then come to some sort of place of intellectual and emotional and perhaps spiritual honesty. That was a big deal when they finally found the body of the man that was pushed in. The fellow who claimed to be God, he's not God, in my opinion. That's a red herring. He was a nut. But what does that say about believers or people who believe, you know, or, you know, throughout history, there are these people who claimed divinity and claimed divine powers, and there were people who followed them. So, you know, that's a commentary there. I also think Matt has been functioning in this particular episode as a Greek chorus. Okay, I gotta go. I think I'm out of time.
Thank you, Rafe. I appreciate the phone call, as always.
Hey, Mary and Blake. It's Preston from Montgomery, Alabama.
Yes, Preston.
I'm calling to give you my thoughts on Certified. I'll start off by saying, hey, Mary, I'm sure your brain is going like 90 miles over that dog, so I'm right there with you. The Leftovers, they kind of had this undercurrent of suicide. We talked about it with Nora a few episodes ago when she was laying on the packing peanuts and whatnot. But I found this episode to have something to say about suicide. Lori, she says in the beginning about killing Godzilla with a nuclear missile. Don't miss. We've got Nora. She's chasing this suicide-like track, but it's predicated on something. And then we've got Kevin, and he's going to commit suicide, but they have these reasons for it. And Lori, she doesn't need one. She doesn't need some grander purpose. She doesn't need to solve anything. She just needs to not be here anymore. And so I thought that was lovely. She really does know what she's doing and why. But I also want to say that we live in an age where nobody's dead on television unless you see a body, except for on The Leftovers. I really like the way there was no body, because that's the show. So, give it 5 Damons. It made me cry. It made me think. It made me feel. And have a great day.
Thank you, Preston. As always, you bring it every single week.
Hi, Mary. Hi, Blake. First time calling about The Leftovers, at least this season. I don't know if I'm going to run out of time, so I'll try to be quick. I love the callbacks last night with all the different things. I thought one of the most gut-wrenching parts that hooked me in the very first season was that mother's agony when her baby disappeared out of that car seat. So to have the mother of the missing baby on again was a real circling back, I thought. And I really was interested in seeing how Lori reacted to that, because she was experiencing such deep pain of her own, she didn't even know how to answer. The other thing that I thought was interesting was whenever the clap of thunder and the imminent storm, and Kevin Sr. said, "Storm's coming," and that kind of reminded me of one of my other favorite movies, The Terminator. So knowing how you guys are into so many different movies, it's like sometimes they kind of harken back to other movies that are our favorites. a lot of things dealing with faith and religion last night. It's like they're really got that ball rolling, and there's more and more references to that. I thought whenever Lori left Matt and Carrie, well, I'm mixing my actors and actresses now with their characters, but whenever she had to leave them, she almost looked back, but then couldn't bear to do it, knew it was not a good idea because she might not want to leave. And that kind of reminded me of the story of Lot and his wife who had to leave. They've been warned, don't look back because you'll turn into a pillar of salt. And Lot's wife did look back, and she didn't ever leave there because of it. Mm-hmm. Also, so much talk about the apostle nod to all the religious ties that some are more interested in the faith implications than others. And, of course, you know, Kevin's wife is not having any of it. Mm-hmm. I was happy for Mary that it didn't seem like there was anything more that's bad about the character there on the farm. You know, she hasn't exhibited any more tendencies to kill people. I mean, other than wanting to drown Kevin.
You know that one.
I do find interesting this whole notion that Kevin Sr. has that the whole world is going to be destroyed by flood whenever, if one is a member of the faith community and subscribes to that sort of thing, as I do, it says in Scripture quite clearly in Genesis 9:11-17, specifically in verses 14 through 15, it talks about God says, "And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood."
Oh, we lost you. Oh, no. Crapola.
That was getting so biblically deep.
That was very good. Okay, we got one more final voicemail.
Hey, fellow lefties. It's Missy Ortiz. And hey, I'm calling in to say that I cried my ass off on last night's episode. It was truly emotional. We got so much closure on things. I actually was blown away by Amy Brenneman's performance. I mean, she always does good, but wow, a lot of people weren't expecting to see this. We went in blind. We got just an emotional roller coaster. You know, there was funny moments with a senior and the koala fart and just all kinds of things. A lot of funny things happened, but more, sad things. And I was very blessed to see, that flashback that they gave us, before, Lori went into the GR. And that was just very, Garvey's at their best. Mm-hmm. You know, and then, we got, would you call it like a flash, like a sideways, like Lost, you know, when she was with Nora and Matt in the Volkswagen van.
Yes.
Lost.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Another
nod to
Lost.
Back, Kate.
But no, oh my gosh. Her talking with Kevin about their departed baby, that was, oh my gosh. When she says, "I'm pregnant," or "I was pregnant," I was like, oh my God. I screamed. I was like, yes. Thank you. We've been waiting for this. And so I got excited on that part, but it was just wow. Now I just want to close off and say that I want to talk about that beach ball /baseball game thing that Nora was talking about. I didn't get the metaphor. I get everything that happens on the show, but I did not get that metaphor. Can someone please explain it to me? Russell tried. I don't get it. I've been rewatching it. I don't know why it's not sinking in. I maybe I'm just terrified that there's only two episodes left and I'm freaking out. I don't know, but oh my gosh, lefties, we got two episodes left. I am terrified. I'm scared.
I know.
Okay, guys. Well, we'll talk soon. Okay. I'm going to go cry. Bye.
Mary, I will leave it to you.
Okay, so baseball's going on. Real big deal thing, but everyone's having fun, or at least this area, the stands are having fun looking at this ball, which really has nothing to do with baseball, which really has nothing anymore to do with life that we are living. Okay, so the beach ball, it's just this fun, easygoing thing that you can have your dreams in that doesn't really matter in the situation that you're in anymore.
Right.
Okay. And the kids especially are having fun. It's like daydreaming. That's what I feel like. I like the childlike innocence of like, oh, let's just look at the ball and not pay attention to the game. The whole reason we're here. So basically, the guy squishes it because it could become a distraction on the field. It could become a distraction in the stands. But most importantly, it could really hurt and cause chaos in the land below. Mm-hmm. So the bouncing ball, the beach ball, is schemes and random lies about departures. It's like when Lori said, not when Nora says, if someone says they're missing, go to police. If someone says they departed, come to me. So it's people making up lies that someone departed. It's people making up schemes like, oh, I know where they are. You can call them on my phone. I'm just making that up right now. But it's schemes. That's the beach ball. That's the hope. That's that childlike innocence that maybe I can talk to these people. Maybe I can play. Maybe I can like still have hope. I don't need to focus on the real world. I don't need to focus on my job or my career, there goes my glass, or the real things in life, because there's this little bit of hope, and the DSD squishes the false hopes so that people can focus on the real thing.
Right. And I think you did an exceptional job there.
Good
Thank
job.
You.
All right. You ready for the tweet of the week? There was yes. another tweet of the week.
Yay!
All right, this week's Tweet of the Week comes from, KMK Miller. The reason why they tweeted this was because we had to postpone the live show here.
I know.
And it was because it was because of my bad migraine. Mm-hmm. And I was mentioning to everybody that I was taking medication, and I was going to be a little loopy today. And I think this episode has been a little loopy, I'm not going to lie.
Yes.
And their tweet was, I hope it's not all the dog's medication.
Oh, that would be bad news.
Yes. Yeah. So that would be that. So thank you very much for getting the tweet of the week.
Yay.
You've earned it.
You want to know a fun fact?
Yes. Would love it.
Other animals made a presence into the closed captioning this week.
Really?
Birds chirping.
Oh, maybe the birds are in cahoots with the dogs.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm starting to lose faith in my dog theory.
Really?
Starting to lose a little faith, guys.
All right. Well, do you have a... actually, you know what? Before I get into the sudden theory of the week.
Okay.
I did want to mention one thing. You know, the nominations for the Emmys are due to the Academy by June 12th.
Okay.
And we, lefties, have an opportunity to really make a difference in nominations and getting the word out about The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. Because as we've said, as Damon has joked, there's only 38 people that watch this show, including, you know, us two and everybody else watching this live broadcast at this moment. But we really do have an opportunity here to give the entire television community a real opportunity to see what The Leftovers is about and how great it is. In an episode like this, Amy Brenneman, really, best supporting actress for a television show. Easily. I mean, hands down. And in previous seasons, I really feel like we've done a lot. I think we've done a good amount. Mm-hmm. But what really got me going here was the stunt with Jimmy Kimmel that he did with Justin Theroux. He stole his car, and then he's like, oh, I don't think HBO is doing a good enough job promoting this, so we want to make sure that hashtag JustinTime, that you get nominated for an Emmy because you're doing an amazing job on The Leftovers. And I thought, you know what? Let's get everybody that watches this show live or listens to the podcast to go on social media, and let's have a hashtag. And a very simple hashtag, Leftovers for Emmys. Hashtag Leftovers for Emmys. And let's show the television community and the Academy, who votes on the Emmys and nominates.
And all of our friends who follow us on Twitter.
I know. Let's show them who we want to be nominated. Why do you want them to be nominated? What would you do as a lefty to get The Leftovers nominated? Like, what would you sacrifice? Like, we always talk about Kevin sacrificing his life for everybody, sacrificing things for the end of the world to make sure that doesn't happen. What would you do to make sure that The Leftovers gets nominated for the Emmys? And let's take pictures. Take pictures of yourself.
I would podcast about it.
We do. And take pictures of yourself in white and take pictures of yourself holding up a notepad saying hashtag leftovers for Emmys. Or,
yes,
you know, like I have this dream of like putting a fake Wu-Tang Clan tattoo on my daughter's arm with hashtag
who
leftovers
is 2 years
Emmy.
Old.
Yes. Why not? And take a picture of that. Share it to HBO. Share it to the Emmys. Share it to Jimmy Kimmel. Share it to him because he did this for Lost. Like he shared everybody's videos when Lost was in their final season because he just loved the show and he loves leftovers. So hashtag leftovers for Emmys. And let's start it right now. If you listen to other podcasts, tell them. If you are on Twitter, if you're on Reddit, if you are on Facebook, if you're in the Facebook group that we're going live to, mm-hmm. let's start this movement now.
Whenever you talk about the leftovers, you should have the hashtag leftovers for Emmys right. from here on out.
But show good examples of what you're doing as a lefty. Like, again, show yourself in white. Show yourself holding up the pad. Take a video asking...
No, show yourself eating peanut butter.
Yes, right? With your dog.
With your dog, you know? Yes.
Or like, who knows? Or show yourself...
reading National Geographic.
Yes, with the National Geographic
thing.
Why am
I not on their PR campaign? I got this, man.
So I think that is on all of us. Hashtag leftovers for Emmy. So please do... after you're done listening to this podcast,
oh my gosh, now
get
I want
on the
peanut
phone,
butter.
Take a picture of yourself with something leftovers related and put leftovers for Emmys. Tell the Academy who you want nominated and why. Tag Jimmy Kimmel, tag HBO,
yes.
Tag the actor, Carrie Coon, Amy Brenneman, Christopher Eccleston, Justin Theroux. They're all on Twitter. Tag them all. I think we have an opportunity. And now that I'm all jacked up, now
yes.
that I'm all riled up, are you ready for the sudden theory of the
yes,
week.
Yes, I am. Bum, bum,
bum. All right, Marvin, do you have one?
I don't think the dogs are going to play a big role that I thought they were going to be anymore. But I do think I will still see closed captioning dogs barking. Maybe instead of like a seven-headed lizard thing, it'll be a seven-headed dog. Just kidding. Okay, what's your like legitimate sudden theory?
All right, my sudden theory. I challenged any of the listeners and any of the watchers to tell me where they thought the leftovers was going. And you know how many replies I got? Bupkis. I got zero. You want to know why?
Why?
Because nobody knows where the leftovers is going. Nobody would ever tell you that they thought that Lori would end up the way that she did in this episode. Nobody figured that out. So again, I'm going to have a cop-out.
No.
I'm going to have a cop-out at Sudden Theory of the Week. Listen, the nerds down the hall, they're letting me down.
My children?
No. Yes, our children. No, the nerds who work on my sudden theories for me.
Oh.
You know, the ones who do my takes for
Nobody
me.
Nobody understands what you're saying.
You know, I've mentioned this a couple of times before.
Yeah.
They got nerds who I put out the call to the nerds, and they come and they help me out.
Okay.
And the nerds are letting me down, and they have no ideas, and neither do I. So my final sudden theory, well, not my final, but my sudden theory of the week is that Nora does try to microwave herself, but nothing happens.
Oh, my God, except she smells. You know when you microwave and you're like, oof, she probably shouldn't have microwaved that one.
It turns out like a little, like, you know, like those smart ones when you microwave it just a little too long.
Oh my God.
Like
where
crispy
she puffs
on the edges.
Up like when you microwave a marshmallow. It's like, whoom, and then it goes back down to normal size.
Oh my. You know what? We did say this episode was going to get a little loopy. So yeah, Nora does try to microwave herself and maybe she ends up like a marshmallow. Maybe nothing happens, but I think nothing is going to happen.
Please hang up and try again.
I have a question.
Yes.
How did Grace find the original book?
What do you mean?
Grace had the book. She was reading about a guy named Kevin. So she obviously found the other Kevin's copy in the trash.
No.
Right?
Remember Kevin Sr. was holding the page when he was sitting at the cross.
Oh, okay.
And, Lori does bring the burned copy.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Because she did off screen meet up with Nora. Off screen, they
got it
they were
Matt.
All together.
Yes.
Okay. So I have a new song for the final thoughts.
Good.
Are you ready for the new song?
Yes. Oh what? Oh, it's the final countdown for reals.
Yes, it's the final countdown. It is the final countdown for the last few episodes of The Leftovers. So, my love.
What if Nora gets in the little box while the second departure happens?
Oh, that's a valid
point.
And
she misses it, and then all that's left is her and the pigeons. Okay, that's your final thoughts.
What I like about this episode is that it has really built up the tension, and it really has built up a place for everybody where they're going, and it has answered some questions for some characters. It has given Lori a send-off. It has now set up where John and Matt and Michael are going. It sets up Kevin. It puts them all in the specific place. And now we have two episodes left to figure it out. The momentum now has... Remember how we talked about the last episode? It was that one final breath before everything starts going downhill?
Yes.
That's where we are now careening
Something's
going to
happen with Michael.
That's the end. So good. Something is probably going to happen with Michael.
Feeling the doubt.
I don't know.
Michael's feeling a little like, guys, is this a really good idea? Is this really a good idea?
I mean, there are huge things to be dealt with here. I mean, what's going to happen in the next episode? Are we really going to have a whole nother episode dedicated to the international assassin type deal, like in the hotel? There are huge things happening surrounding this episode, and it is now starting that conclusion. And the momentum that has been built up, I couldn't leave the screen. My eyes were glued to the screen this entire episode. And I really loved it. So anything for you, my love?
Hold on tight, Spider Monkey, is all I can say. Mm-hmm. That's it, man.
I really have to play the Twilight music?
We don't have the Twilight music queued up.
All right, let's close out the show.
Okay. All right, so as you all knew, you can reach us on social media, but the best social media to reach us on is right here on Facebook. You can find us at Living Reminders, but you can also find us on Twitter at Living Reminders. Those are the best ways to reach us.
I would say so. And if you really want to get in touch with us with a lengthy message, you can always reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
You love to say that.
That's my favorite thing to say in this entire closeout. And another thing I want to highlight too, again, is the fact that please, if you do love The Leftovers, if you do want to see get its due in the Emmys and in the Academy, please start this campaign of #LeftoversForEmmys. Start the campaign to let people know what you would do, who you want, and why you want them. Videos, pictures, act certain things out. Put a picture of Justin Thoreau on your bed for all I care.
Oh my gosh, like, no.
Why not?
Yes.
What? Yeah.
Okay,
see,
Blake.
I knew you'd be on board with that.
So, okay, do it. Hashtag Leftovers for Emmys. We want to see it. Put it on Instagram. You all know everybody's on Instagram, but tag these actors. Tag Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel loves The Leftovers. He loves Justin Thoreau. He might retweet you. He might like it. You never know. Okay. So the other thing you got to do is you got to start talking to your friends. You have to start talking about this show. Let people who haven't yet watched this show know about the brilliance about The Leftovers. This is one of the best shows we have ever watched. It has got us talking. So tell your friends. Tell them about this podcast and call in next week, guys. Call in. Send us your thoughts because there's only two more episodes left. That's it.
That's the end.
Final countdown.
Well, if you want to watch all the rest of our episodes, you can find them on Facebook, live videos that we're doing, or you can always go to thelivingreminders.com to get all of the episodes in podcast form.
Yes.
Well,
all right.
That's it.
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
And we're still here. But Lori isn't. Glub. 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney. Maybe that's where she was. R.I.P.